Welcome to a different sort of episode of the Think Christian podcast, a multiverse variation, if you will. I'm still Josh Larson, and there's still no such thing as secular on this show, but the format, we've mixed things up a bit. As virtual watch parties have become a thing while people are sheltering in place during COVID-19, the TC Podcast team thought it would be fun to have one of our own. So a few Fridays ago, we got together, virtually, to watch the 2018 animated film Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, all at the same time while on a Zoom call. We also recorded our commentary during the movie and had a good group discussion after. Now, some of you already know this because you were there. We invited listeners via email and also through our Twitter and Facebook accounts. Find us at Think Christian. And we had a good response. A spirited group showed up. There was a lot of discussion. Listeners were part of the commentary via Zoom chat during the movie. And of course, they chimed in afterwards for the open discussion. Now, what we're sharing on this episode is some of our pre-movie chat and then that open discussion at the end. If you want more, if you'd like to have our in-movie commentary so you can listen to it while watching Spider-Verse yourself, we're going to go ahead and put that out in a second download that will be coming soon. So a brief reminder, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse centers on Miles Morales, a high schooler who gets bitten by a radioactive spider and whose transition into Spider-Man gets even more complicated than usual. That's because a portal opens in time and space, allowing six variations on the titular hero from these parallel dimensions to come together. The film is just a delight. It combines comic book aesthetics with a very contemporary dynamism that comes from state-of-the-art animation. All of that, plus the clever story, really gave us rich fodder for our discussion. We touch on the idea of calling, especially as people of faith. We talked about what mentoring looks like for Christians in light of the mentoring we see in the movie. And we even dig into how costuming can be a sign of sanctification. It's good stuff, so let's get into it. What I'd like to do is quickly introduce you to each person on the podcast team who is here so you can put some faces to the voices you'll be hearing through the movie and then afterwards. So I thought it would be fun not only to have them say their name, but also name their favorite Spider-Verse spider character. Make that choice, pin them down, and very quickly share why. So let's start with J.R. Forasteros. He's serving as our tech moderator tonight. J.R., give us your pick.
Yeah, so it's got to be Miles for me because I remember when he was introduced in the comics in the Ultimate Marvel Universe, and I fell in love with him immediately. I was definitely one of those people that was like, you can't replace Peter Parker. And it was this whole big comic book thing where Peter died and then they brought in a new Spider-Man. And I fell in love with Miles from the first issue, and like getting to see him in his own movie was a dream come true. So got to be Miles for me.
All right, Miles. Claude, let's go to you. Claude Acho, who's your pick?
Man, I mean, I'm going to sound boring. I got to say Miles too. Just smooth style. The Jordan 1s, the black and the red, man. Just like if this was out when I was a kid, I would have been all over this. So I really enjoy that.
I'm going to make a note about those Jordans when they show up. That is an awesome touch. Catherine, share with us your favorite Spider-Verse character.
Well, I hate to be boring. I mean, I feel like for me, it's a toss-up between Miles and Gwen. Since everyone, so far, we've only heard Miles. Miles is awesome. I'll go with Gwen. I just love the female representation. I think also, too, that she's kind of independent, has her own strength and her own ideas, and she's kind of a rebel, but also really smart and capable.
All right, thanks. That was Catherine Freeman. And Joe George, who's your pick?
I'm going to go with the classic, the old, depressed, overweight Peter Parker, in part because when I was a kid getting into comics, Peter was a young adult, and I've always kind of had a soft spot for, you know, young adult Peter Parker, and because as I get older, I am becoming that version of Peter Parker.
Some identification going on there.
Too much.
How about Abby Olchesi?
I think my choice is Spider-Ham. I'm a big Spider-Ham fan. And part of that is because I'm a huge John Mulaney fan. And so knowing he was in the movie was really exciting. But also, I think Spider-Ham is a good personification of what I like a lot about this movie is just that it goes to unexpected places. There's some really odd stuff in there that I think from an outside perspective really shouldn't work, but somehow does and all kind of comes together and coalesces. So I like that Spider-Ham kind of represents that part of the movie well for me. Also, he likes pie, and I like pie.
Good. I'm glad Spider-Ham got a vote there. One more person we want to hear from, I believe, unless I'm leaving someone out, but I think we still need to hear from Sarah Welch-Larson.
Spider-Man Noir all the way. I'm seeing a lot of love for him in the chat as well. So all of you people who also said Spider-Man Noir, you are correct.
All right. Support there. I think I am going to go with Spider-Gwen. And I have a similar reason to JR, is my daughter started getting me into those comics shortly before Spider-Verse came out. So I had sort of that association already going in. And that was the first Spider-Man comic I had read since I was a kid. So it had been a while, and loved the comics. And I mean, I just think she has the most awesome costume too, with the hood and everything. So that is my pick. Thank you, you guys. I think we should get started. I want to get to people, but first I want to ask Claude, because he suggested Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse for this event tonight, when those of us on the podcast team were kind of throwing some titles around. So get us started, Claude, just if you don't mind saying why you thought this would be a good one for tonight.
Yeah, I mean, we had a lot of great movies kind of on the whiteboard, so maybe we'll get to do some more of those in the future. But I was just thinking of a movie that I wanted to rewatch and that I think a lot of people had seen and really resonated with, felt impacted by. So that's why I threw this one out there. And I think for me, you know, watching it again, just the themes of expectation and calling and sort of, you know, wrestling with the ability to live up to this sense of calling that Miles has and how relatable that is to a life of faith. And in particular, I was really struck with just the scene with Miles and his dad and just that moment he's tied up and he can't run away from what his dad is saying. And he actually has to listen and receive his dad's grace and acceptance. And I thought that was pretty powerful.
Yeah, thanks. All right, let's open it up and we'll just give this a try. If you're not able to get through, but you want to drop something in chat, feel free to do that. Otherwise, maybe state your name and let us know if you have a comment or a question.
My name is Dustin. It's now my second time using Zoom. I want to come to the defense of watching this in 3D. As folks said, they couldn't handle it. I saw it twice in 3D, and it's one of the few examples, I think, of movies that are sort of made for the format and not just filmed for certain scenes or just for the knowledge of 3D. You know, it's just for the sake of it. I think actually the way the animation is laid out here, from the moment that, you know, the opening credits came on, you know, with watching that on 3D, it was like, oh my goodness. I think it's just very layered, and as beautiful as it is watching it here at home, you know, watching the different layers of it on the screen from the 3D format, I think was really something. So if ever somehow you have a chance to do that, I highly recommend.
All right, maybe you're convincing me, because that's the reasoning I do accept in 3D. The only ones I really have appreciated were the intentional ones, something like Avatar, and also the stop motion film Coraline, which were like envisioned from the start to be 3D. So that makes sense. Maybe I'll be brave and give it a try. Good to meet you, by the way, Dustin. Some of you will recognize Dustin's written for Think Christian. So you and I have emailed many times, so it's good to see you face to face. Excellent. Anybody else?
Hi, my name is Zach Brown, and I'm a really big fan of Spider-Man movies, and I want to give a big shout-out to my good friend, Jared Forstales, because I miss him so much. I just want to give a big shout-out to all this really big event. I'm really big, huge fan of Spider-Man, so I have a poster of it next to my wall. The Spider-Ham character, he's pretty funny because he uses that mallet when he was going back to his home and all that stuff, and then he goes like, "Is he a cartoon? Am I allowed to say that?" I was like laughing inside. I'm like, oh my God, Spider-Man. But when I looked at his character, I was like, I think his nostril looks like his eyes. I was like, oh, okay. He's like a really short kid. I'm like, okay.
I want you to have this. It'll fit in your pocket. That's all, folks.
Is he allowed to say that? Legally?
Well, Zach, you pointed out with Spider-Ham, the nostrils and the eyes matching too. And I didn't notice that the first time around. So thanks for pointing that out. And yeah, thanks for joining us tonight. Let's see if anyone else has a comment or a question they want to bring up.
If I could jump in, I love the fact that JR listed gentrification as a villain for the movie. I didn't pick it, but I got new eyes for this film because this last year I was teaching as an inner city school teacher at a school that's primarily in a gentrified neighborhood. So all the kids that should be zoned for this school but are wealthy enough not to go there because they're in the gentrification neighborhood go to private schools outside the area. However, most of the kids in this school are extremely talented, very gifted in a lot of different ways, but because of the environment they're in, because of the circumstances they're surrounded with, well, more than likely, like I always had heard of the school-to-prison pipeline, but never really thought of it as being much more than a saying until you see it in action. And you see how it's going to map itself out. And you can kind of see the same thing with, if Miles weren't given the opportunity that he's given with the Brooklyn Vision School, what would he become? Or if there weren't some major incident in his life, i.e. getting bit by a radioactive spider, what would happen with who he was? Would he end up back in the school that he wants to be at versus the school that he could be at? I don't know. Does anyone want to comment on that further?
Well, I think you see that reflected also in Miles' dad's concern about getting him into that school, right? That's one of the reasons you sense why it is so important to him. But yeah, I don't know if anyone else had any further thoughts on that.
I mean, I kind of love the father-son portrayal in the whole movie, but I think in the end, his parents think that that's the best for him. But I would also challenge that assumption because there are lots of kids in grade schools that have lots of problems, that have drug problems and all kinds of things. And I'm always really hesitant to like always assume that like having more resources equals better. But I understand why his parents wanted him to have that experience in terms of like just quality of education and things like that. But I do think there are other problems that come into that. And then I think you see that in the beginning of the movie, like he doesn't really fit. Like culturally, he's much more, I'm assuming his family lives in Washington Heights. I don't know if that is, but there are challenges and things that kids have to work through when they are moved from more culturally homogeneous environments into more heterogeneous environments. And sometimes they don't make it out unscathed either way. Sometimes I feel like it's like a double-edged sword, but I love kind of the resolution that in the end, the last conversation he has with his dad where he's like, we're going to have to agree to disagree. I kind of even just saw that his own dad's growth of like, we're not going to be the same. Like, I'm not your buddy, but I love you. And for Miles to be able to say like, oh yeah, you love me and you're not trying to make me into someone I don't want to be. You want me to be the best version of myself. So that would be my thought on that.
Yeah, that's one of the things I love about this movie too, Catherine, is that it's not just Miles who has to grow and learn lessons. It's almost like every character has their arc in some way. And just to kind of tie up what I was getting at there when I was talking during the movie about that line where Peter says, how do I know I'm not going to mess it up again? And, you know, this idea of being afraid of getting another chance because we're going to screw it up one more time. And so maybe we don't really want that other chance. And the reality is we are going to screw it up, right? We're not going to get it done perfectly. So kind of the spiritual truth there is just that Christ has that covered too, even the next screw up and the next screw up and the next screw up. And so at some point you just got to say, okay, this is a gift. It's not a second chance, which I think there's a distinction there. It's not a second chance for me to solve it. It's a second chance for me to finally accept the gift is kind of how I read that moment where Peter let himself go back to his other life.
And it's funny, when you said that in the movie, I heard when he said you won't, that he was saying not that you won't screw up again, but that you won't know that you won't screw up again. And then when he says it's a leap of faith, because you don't know. And I found that to be reassuring because I think oftentimes we hold ourselves back from doing things, or at least I'll speak for me. My personal thing is like, I want things to go perfectly and I want to know exactly how things are going to work out before I will decide one way or the other. I heard him to say, you won't know that you're not going to screw it up again, but you have to take a leap of faith and like give yourself the opportunity to do things differently.
You gotta go home, man. How do I know I'm not gonna mess it up again? And you won't. Right. It's a leap of faith.
All right, we can spend a little more time here, I think, if any other folks want to chime in.
Can anyone offer any insight to this post-credit scene? I remember having some questions about it in the theater, and it's now I have an opportunity. Anyone who's a little more, I'm a DC guy, so if anyone's more versed in the Spider-Verse, know what this is a reference to.
Sarah, did you have any thoughts about Spider-Man 2099?
All I know about him is that he's voiced by Oscar Isaac, which also makes him a very good Spider-Man. But that's all I've got.
It's to me, I took this as largely setting up sequel stuff, obviously with Spider-Gwen coming back at the end and talking to Miles. But Spider-Man 2099 is a Spider-Man from a future reality where Alchemax, which is one of the big Marvel bad corporations like Oscorp and all those, has like basically taken over New York. It's called Nueva York now. And he's a new spider person that usually he, you know, travels back to whatever present day counts as in Marvel Universe. But I assume he figured out a way to not glitch when he travels the multiverse, which was the point of that whole band that he has. But Joe, any other?
No, you pretty much covered it. His character's name, Miguel O'Hara. Really interesting, futuristic take. Yeah, you covered it all. That's who it is. And then they get the meme in there. I recommend the Spider 2099 comic books written by Peter David. They're really great. And I'm more of a DC guy myself. So he wrote good DC stuff too. So if you like Peter David.
No, I remember seeing this in the theater and not anticipating to go see it because I, you know, felt a certain fatigue, you know, at that point by the homework that the Marvel singular 20-part movie became. And I remember a friend of mine saying, you know, recommending it. And I was like, you know, I've got it. You know, like maybe I'll get to it at some point, but I see what Marvel is. And I think why this stands out so much is that it was so different. And, you know, even though the larger canonical, you know, the string of films, even though there were different characters and different directors, there was a sense at a point that if you had seen enough of them, you had seen them. But having seen this, one, Spider-Man has never been one of my favorite characters per se. Again, I was a DC guy and give me X-Men over Spider-Man and Marvel, but it was so fresh. It was so interesting and just opened up a possibility of them. I know the Disney Corporation wouldn't necessarily do this, but the possibility of these variations, you know, in the characters, in the installments, like even stronger, not just some are more comedic and more, some are more dramatic, but really playing with form and tone in a way that comic books, I think, do. You know, it's one thing you want to connect to the same characters, but there's also something about seeing really what a different artist or a different writer will do, how they would contribute. And there's that variation. I think there's also that appeal to different trades. So, you know, I would love to see a little more risk-taking, not necessarily see another one that looked just like this, but to really play with the ways you can approach familiar characters rather than coming at them in familiar ways.
Yeah, I'm hoping, you know, I'm totally with you on the Marvel style, especially in the movies. They're all very controlled. And again, as a DC guy, I like watching characters pass on the mantle. So I'm hoping that the Marvel TV shows that are coming out, particularly Falcon and Winter Soldier, will give us a little bit of that as we watch the Falcon become Captain America, you know, and kind of see, similarly to what we just saw here, that not only is Captain America going to be a different person, but it's going to be a black man now, and see how that's going to play out. It's a different medium that's supposed to be within the same world. There's hope, at least, that we'll get a little bit of that playing with theme and structure. We'll see. I mean, it's still Disney, so.
I know we kind of talked about this as the movie was going on, but I was reflecting again about the costumes and specifically that Stan Lee cameo that Zach mentioned, where he says it always fits eventually, and how, you know, the first time Miles looks into the case of spider costumes, you know, his head is reflected like basically in the chest. And then when he comes back and he's ready, like it's reflected as though he's grown into the suit. And I was thinking about Paul's admonition to, you know, put on Christ, put on righteousness, and how I think for believers, there's this understanding that, you know, sanctification is a journey that we go on, and Christ's ways don't fit immediately for us. There's something that we have to grow into. And I just love that line. It always fits eventually. Like, I love that. That's such a powerful prophetic word over us, you know, that, yeah, like it's not gonna always feel normal or right because the way of Christ cuts so against the grain of our culture, and it always fits eventually. Just keep at it, you know. And back to Josh's point, keep at it doesn't mean keep trying to earn it, keep trying harder, but sit there and allow God to love us and allow that love to transform us and make us new. Yeah, it's a process, but it always fits eventually.
In some ways, that's the through line in Spider-Man Homecoming, which is all about the Spidey suits, right? Which one that Peter has and which one he's going to earn from Tony Stark and all that sort of stuff. So costuming, of course, important in any superhero movie, but Spider-Man Homecoming, I feel like it was especially crucial.
JR, I really liked the metaphor that you gave. And also just because I feel like when I've heard that scripture discussed or brought up. It's not always brought up in a gradual sense. It's often like, put on the full armor, put it on like right now. You're not doing it right, put it on this second. But I think the truth is that it is, in fact, more of a journey, and it is more of a having to learn how you engage with the different parts of faith and how you engage with the different parts of righteousness and what that looks like in your life, because it's not always going to be like a black and white thing for every single person because your situation is different, which is also a thing that you see here, like with the fact that the suits have to look different on the different characters because it's what fits their needs and their personality and their abilities. So yeah, I wanted to give you a kudos for that. That's a really great way of looking at that scripture.
And another point, my name is Wilson, on the costume front that's interesting just in this discussion is how Miles' old clothes don't quite fit anymore after he gets bitten. So he's already growing out of his old identity too.
Oh man, good call.
Just going to say, building on what you all are saying, I mean, it really sticks with that Colossians 3 is one of those places that put off and put on. So there's things that Miles, obviously, he needs to shed and get rid of, which he struggles to do, right? The sort of
like
self-doubt,
tying a shoe.
All these sort of things. Like tying a shoe. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So the put off and the put on, as Wilson mentioned, man, I think it's just a great insight.
Well, and I think it does speak too to that tension, I think, Abby, that you were talking about, right? Where there is an immediate change in him. There is something that does happen immediately when he, you know, comes into his new life, but then he still has to grow into it also. It's like a both and, it's not one or the other. And I think my particular denomination, we sort of like built our brand on an instant sanctification sort of an experience. And there's this big debate because then our churches got filled up with a bunch of people who said that they never sinned anymore. And everyone else is like, I mean, really? Because I hang out with you. And so we're really kind of trying to live in that both and tension where it's like, yeah, there's something immediate that happens in the life of someone when they come into faith. But then there's also this ongoing work of sanctification, you know, and I love that the film, again, while I don't think it was intended to be a spiritual allegory, you see both of those things. That's such a good catch. I love it.
Hey, I'm Elliot. Thanks for doing this. I really enjoyed getting to watch the movie and hear y'all's thoughts. I think I'd never really seen the mentorship angle quite as much before, but having had my attention drawn to that, I've got a lot of ideas now. And I just think it's really cool that like everyone was Spider-Man and they were Spider-Man in their own way. And the way that Miles was Spider-Man drew from the others in some ways and didn't in other ways. And I don't know, just kind of applying that to the Christian life too. Like there are certain elements that are core and central, and then there's a lot of stuff that's just not. And if you try and make everyone fit into your particular brand and subset and denomination of Christianity, then you end up being like the gatekeepers they were, where they just kind of scared them off for a minute. And yeah, I don't know. I've got a lot of thoughts. Might write something. I wish I knew of a site where they wrote about these kinds of things. But
thanks, Elliot. Yeah, actually, Joe, you wrote a little bit about that when this film came out for Think Christian, right? You touched on it more as being like an example of the Great Commission and different people being called in different ways. But I think that's a little bit of what Elliot was getting at too.
Yeah, I mean, and it's right there with the costuming, right? That each character has their own way of being Spider-Man that is very much in their Spider-Man-ness. And that's true for all of us. We're all planted in particular bodies, experiences, times, and so on. And the way that we live out the Great Commission, the way that we be Christ to other people, it's going to look radically different the way that I do it, the way that you do it, and so on. And the beautiful part of the movie is that last part there where he says, you know, anyone can wear the mask. It's not a mask for us. It's an identity. But that identity is going to be both similar, you know, like the way that all the spider people are, they're the only ones who understand that. And we've certainly had that experience when you're talking with other Christians about, wow, I know what that call looks like. I know what that struggle looks like. And it's always going to be different because the way that I enact that call or embody Christ in my particular milieu is going to look necessarily different than everybody else's. And, you know, superhero movies are a power fantasy. And we can read that the power that we've been given by Christ to enact and save is going to look necessarily different. So, yeah, that's what I was kind of getting at.
Well, I love that we've been able to hear from so many of you. So maybe is there anyone who hasn't had a chance to say something that still might want to?
Hi. So my name's Christian. I've really enjoyed getting to watch the movie and listen to everyone talk. Going on the idea also of mentorship, it was quite jarring just because of all of the animation styles when all of the Spider-Men kind of traversed together and I'm jumping to like five different animation styles at once. But it's going into that, actually, that I started thinking about, especially in Titus, kind of that call to mentorship and that call of imitation that we looked at before, but also when Miles is just suffering from the brokenness of his uncle dying, and everyone goes into how all of their uncles died or and how people's parents died. And there was a view there that I thought this movie really looked at, which was an expanded view of brokenness and not just kind of the limited viewpoint that we could be given before based off of who we know Spider-Man to be. So being given these five different viewpoints of brokenness and zooming in on it, I think that there was a beauty in that, in being able to expand what people have not been used to looking at, if that at all makes sense.
Yeah, for me, I think that moment was just an expression of shared suffering, which is maybe, you know, another way of describing it, which isn't necessarily beautiful on first thought, but it's kind of necessary in order to work through that. I mean, I don't want to go on another dev's tangent, but I think if any of you have been watching it, one of the interesting things about the loss there that drives so much of the terrible actions is it's one person's specific loss that becomes mythologized to such a degree that it becomes more important than anyone else's. And a lot of bad comes from that. Whereas what we're seeing in that scene that you're talking about, Christian, is a shared suffering that can maybe bring goodness out of it in a different way. Christian, you and I met at the Film Spotting show, right? The live show. Really good to see you. Thanks for joining us. Anyone else want to jump in? We'll probably wrap up here in just a couple minutes so we don't take up your entire Friday night.
I just wanted to jump in on that comment, which I thought was a really good one. And JR, have you been watching Devs? You laughed like you have been. I think we might need to have a conversation later.
I have finished it. And yes, okay. I'm desperate to talk about it.
Oh, good. But yeah, I think, Josh, when you mentioned that, to kind of tie it all back in together, I think that that's very true. And I think Miles even says, like, you wouldn't understand. And Gwen says, we are the only people who would understand. That I feel like grief and suffering is personal for everybody. And that's an important thing to respect. But also, you're never the only person that experiences grief. And I think that's also an important thing in any kind of community situation, if you're trying to even just basically think about another person more complexly, but also if you're like having to actively work with other people, like everybody feels the entire gamut of emotions, even if somebody is more talented than you at something or has a different perspective on something than you do, like the basics still tie it together. And if you lose sight of that, I think you kind of lose sight of your humanity and your brokenness and your ability to help each other and see each other as full kind of Imago Dei spiritual beings.
All right. Maybe one more question or comment from someone, if there's someone we haven't heard from yet, but let's fit in one more before we call it a night.
I'm Roy. What I like about, probably most about the movie, is the breaking of the stereotype of the inner city Black child who doesn't have a father figure. And I thought that was just a fantastic way to present and break that stereotype. So that's what impacted me when I first saw the movie.
Yeah. And as we were saying early on too, you know, the rare comic book figure who has both parents are instrumental figures still in their life as well.
I can just kind of add on that. In addition to that, I think the movie does do a good job of presenting diversity as an organic reality, right? You know, it takes place in New York or a version of New York, and it's going to be diverse accordingly, where you do have, you know, not just black and white, but a, you know, the Afro-Hispanic element. And all along, no one mentions it, you know, because it is just the reality. It's just what happened in a metropolitan area. And at the same time, there isn't a whitewashing of it. I think someone mentioned in the chat earlier that they're very early on, there's no translating of the Spanish, you know. If anything, there's a generational difference that's noticeable, but not a cultural one, at least in a way in which that's the main focus. So I think it does a good job of crushing stereotypes by showing you just how you can present diversity without leaning on stereotypes and heavy-handedness.
Well, and someone noted early on his walk to school, the code switching that he had to do, which was also a way to bring us through all of the diversity that he's navigating in his daily life. And that's just, you know, brilliant animation too, is efficiently communicating those sorts of things through action, through detail, through image, which is why I think it does feel kind of natural and seamless in this story. I am sure we could probably go on and spiral into a devs conversation as well, probably, but maybe that's for another time. I had a blast doing this. I'm thrilled that so many of you joined us. Thankful to the podcast team for being a part of it too. I'm assuming most of you have probably been listening to the Think Christian podcast. Maybe that's what brought you here. Now you've seen some of the faces for some of the voices you've heard. If you haven't, give it a try. We do a lot of this sort of stuff, a little more structured format, I would say, but a lot of this sort of conversation. So if you have been listening to the podcast too, can I just do a quick request? Maybe leave us a review. We got a ton of them when the show first started. They're on Apple Podcasts and they've dribbled in here and there, but some fresh ones would be great just to kind of get us back on the top of the search results and stuff in Apple Podcasts. So it really doesn't take long. If any of you are willing to do that, we would all appreciate it. And of course, keep reading. Everyone you've heard from tonight on the team also does a lot of writing at thinkchristian.net. JR is working on something on devs, as a matter of fact. So that is up ahead. Thank you so much. Really good to meet a lot of you. Thanks for your thoughts and your comments. And if we end up doing something like this again, we'll definitely let you know. Have a good night. She was a bad bad, nevertheless. Calling it quits now, baby, I'm a wreck. Crash at my place, baby, you're a wreck. Needless to say, I'm keeping a check. She was a bad bad, nevertheless. Calling it quits now, baby, I'm a wreck. Crash at my place, baby, you're a wreck. Digging in a bad way, losing your grip. Screaming at my face, baby, don't trip. Someone took a big L, don't know how that felt. Looking at you sideways, party on tilt. Post Malone and Sway Lee there on Sunflower. That song is a bookend, also a favorite of Miles, in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, appears at the beginning and then the very end of the film. We had a ton of fun watching and chatting about Spider-Verse together a few weeks ago. Thank you to the podcast team for being a part of it, and of course to those listeners and friends who joined us. We're probably going to do it again soon, so to make sure you hear about our plans as soon as we make them, I'd suggest following us on Facebook or Twitter. You can find us at Think Christian, or better yet, how about subscribing to receive our emails? thinkchristian.net/subscribe. You'll not only get our articles that way, but also notice of the next watch party. If you have suggestions for what movies would be good to do when we get together for another watch party, go ahead and email those and any other feedback you might have about the show to tcpodcast@thinkchristian.net. The Think Christian Podcast is a production of Reframe Media, a family of programs designed to help you see your whole life reframed by God's gospel story. Visit reframemedia.com for more info. Our audio engineer and post-production supervisor is John Reeder, and Reframe's co-director, overseeing content strategy, is Robin Vassalin. Thank you so much for listening. We'll get together again soon and return to our usual format to consider how another aspect of our pop culture fandom connects with our faith. A final note of thanks to the Communication Arts Department at Trinity Christian College in Palos Heights, Illinois, which provided the recording space for this episode. Learn more at trnty.edu and go Trolls.